Hello to all our listeners in Scotland and even in England and the rest of the world. We are Weirder Things Podcast, and it's all about the paranormal in Scotland. My name is Innes Smith, and his name is...
Michael McCann.
And hello.
Hi.
Hello. So thanks very much for tuning in and listening to the previous podcasts. I hope you have enjoyed them. Thank you for all your emails and your comments. We appreciate them. And if you want to get in touch, if you want to share the love, then you can find us. Well, obviously, our home is Paranormal UK Radio. That's paukradio.com. We have a Facebook page, which is Weirder Things Podcast. We're on Twitter, Weirder Podcast. And you can even email us, and you have been emailing us, and we appreciate that. You can email us on Weirder, just to make it different, weirderthingspodcast@gmail.com. So that's weirderthings, with a TH, podcast@gmail.com. Just to mix it up. Anyway, I hope you've been enjoying the shows, and I hope you enjoy this one. This is about Scottish ufology, or at least a bit.
A bit. Yeah, some of them.
We're just, you know, starting. Because we think people are interested in that sort of thing, don't we?
I believe they are, yes. Yes. We hold our own in the world of ufology for Scotland.
We do. We punch above our weight on many subjects, including ufology. We've got some cracking cases.
Yes.
In Scotland, we've, you know, got our own little magic window triangle area. And, we've got it all happening.
Yeah, we do. We do indeed.
Yeah, so are you personally, just to start off, is this of an area of interest to you, sir?
To me? Speaking to me,
I'm
sir?
I'm speaking to you, right. sir.
Yes, it is. I was going to say probably more than most other things, but we're in an age now where we should be getting proper, real evidence, and I'm sure some people will argue that we are, but I'm not seeing much that's wetting my whistle.
Okay. Were you impressed by that gun cam footage that was released recently?
I did find that interesting, and then I started looking into the story behind it and who released it, and then I again just went straight back to being kind of skeptical of the whole affair. Okay. Because I think it was released by the military, but the military don't release anything unless they want it released. I mean, if it's so good and so fantastical, would they have really released it?
The paranoia kicks in really quick with ufology, doesn't it?
It does. Like straight. I think that's the problem. I don't want to say I don't believe in it, but I do believe in it because I've seen things with my own eyes. But when you have things like social media and all that kind of stuff, you throw that into the mix, it's quite a potent mixture. I miss the days. The 90s, when it was all like blurry video camera footage instead of all this footage that's clearly been somebody sitting on After Effects at home making it themselves.
Right.
Can do it without ever leaving the comfort of their own bedroom.
Nah, there you go. Just too much hoaxing then.
Too much hoaxing, fibbing. Yeah, too much hoaxing, too much fibbing. and that just annoys, it just muddies everything way too much.
Does it poison the well, sir?
It does. So as much as I'd like to be like, yay, there's just nothing. I'm getting a bit tired of it.
It's a cheesecake with some mould on it for you.
A wee bit, yeah.
Yeah.
A wee bit of blue mould on the side.
So you did mention that you've had a personal experience, so we can't let you just say that without grilling you a wee bit more.
Well, I've spoken about it before. Have I not?
Well, do you know what? Just one. Go on.
Oh no, that sounds like can't be bothered. Right, 1994, 93.
For some of our new listeners that haven't heard this story
right,
before,
okay. So 90, I think it was 90. I can't remember. I can't remember the details now. The early 90s, I saw a triangular aircraft in the sky in Edinburgh, and it was like a bright white hot orange colour, and it was me and two other people saw it, and then just very recently, the end of last year, met someone who saw the exact same thing. Not the same night, but same area, same description, and it was the only other time I've ever met anybody who says they've seen something like this. So I found that very interesting.
Yep.
There's one that I haven't spoke about, and I keep meaning to speak about it, but I keep forgetting. A few years ago.
Is that missing time?
No. It was a few years ago. I was in France. I was in France.
Oh.
I was on a bus. I was going from Germany to, I think it was going from the city of Frankfurt to the city of Lille.
As you do.
And it was an overnight bus.
Okay.
That I was on. And as we were driving through, I remember we were driving through Belgium. And it was like really early in the morning, but it was summertime, so it was bright about 4 or 5 o'clock. I'm sorry, is this story boring you?
Right, yeah. No, I'm just getting into it.
Right, okay.
You paint such a vivid of a night bus journey, you know.
Yeah. Start to feel tired. So the sun was coming up, and we were in Belgium, and got some waffles and stuff. It was breakfast time, and then we crossed the border into France.
Okay.
And I was sitting on the bus, and I can't sleep when I travel, right? I can't really do it. So I was slipping in and out of consciousness, but I reached a point where I was just like awake. I'm like, right, I would be there soon. I'll just be awake now.
Okay.
So going through the French countryside, the north of France, and I'm gazing out these big coach windows. And I'm just looking up at the sky because it was that point in the morning where aircraft had started being allowed to take off.
Okay.
So the skies were getting quite busy. Uh-huh. So there's loads of like trails, and I was just looking at all these like plane trails, just lots of planes, lots of plane trails, and there was, like all these nice kind of patterns in the sky and stuff. And then I spotted something, and it looked like a plane. But there was no chemtrail coming off it. No, I'm not calling it a chemtrail. What do you call it? The trail coming off the back of it.
Man, the paranoia is strong with you today.
Yeah. There was no trail coming off it. So I'm like, that's unusual. It looked really, really, really high as well. It looked higher than it should be for an aircraft.
Yeah.
No trail coming off. I'm looking at it and I'm going, that's really weird looking. And then it blinked out of existence. Just went, boop, and it was gone.
Wow.
And I was like, what? And then I kind of like I kept scanning. I'm like, where did it go, like looking for it, like no, mine's just playing tricks. I've looked away and I've lost it, and I kept looking and it was gone. It just wasn't there.
Wow.
And I remember thinking that was weird because that was I don't know what it looked. Do you know when you look at a plane and you know it looks white?
Uh-huh.
When it's really high, it doesn't matter what colour the plane, it just looks. The underbelly, I think, of planes are often white anyway.
Right.
And it just looked like that. It wasn't the shape of a plane, it was just like a dot. And then it just went boop, and it's gone.
Wow.
So I don't know what that was.
Okay.
So that was my latest. That was like 4 or 5 years ago that one happened.
Wow.
And that's when I just remembered. And I don't really talk about it.
Okay.
It's,
we'll allow that one because that's a Scottish person having a UFO experience in France.
Yeah.
So, you know, all the Lions rules count.
Yeah.
That's kind of, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So, yeah. So, it's obviously you must think there's something to it having had personal experience of something odd in the skies.
What I'll say is I believe we are not alone in the universe. I believe in the existence of alien life.
They're out there.
Yeah. What shape or form they come in, I do not know.
Hiya, pals!
If they have the technology to travel here, I don't know. But I've seen some stuff that I don't know what it was or what it is. Do I believe that there is spaceships buzzing about and landing here? I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay.
Unless, you know, somebody can prove otherwise, that's fine. And I'm sure there's people that are going like, but I saw stuff, and that's okay. Just because I didn't see it didn't mean that it's not true.
Okay.
How about you? Have you seen anything strange in the sky?
I believe I can fly. I just always think of that song when anybody says I believe.
I want to believe.
Okay.
Was that a rant? Did I go on a rant?
No. You just put your point across. I think it's perfectly fair.
I think it's weird because like a few weeks ago I was ranting about how I didn't believe in specialists, and now I'm going, and I don't even know if it just
shock jock. That's what you are.
Yeah, I'm just sitting doing a podcast based on the paranormal when I don't even believe in it.
You're just you're like a heartbroken, disillusioned believer. That's what you are.
I think that's, yeah. I would, yeah. That's a good way to describe it.
I've
been messed about too much. It's like a guy who's had his heart broken.
Well, that's it. Is there not
a
saying that
he doesn't want a new girlfriend? He's just sick of getting his heart broke.
Yeah, every cynic is a disappointed idealist or something like that. Yeah. So. I've not seen a UFO. I'm very interested in the subject. I think there are some certainly far more interesting cases than others. Certainly some cases that seem to be much more evidential, especially the ones that have visual sightings and then they're correlated with radar returns and, you know, there's some very impressive ones. And in terms of the credibility of witnesses, it's always like, well, oof.
I think that's where it falls down for me, is because someone can see something and then before you know it, there's bits been added and then there's details been changed, and it seems like every case that I seem to look at in recent history, that seems to be the thing. It starts to get bits built onto the top of it or on the side of it just to embellish it that wee bit more.
Do you think that's what's happening?
I think it is, and I do blame things like social media and things, because everyone has this craving for attention all the time. And I think when it comes to, and I don't think like things like ghost sightings or ufology or cryptozoology has been unaffected by this.
You do realise you've just said everybody's got craving for attention whilst presenting a podcast. You said that out loud. you cannot.
What's your point?
You cannot be innocent of that charge.
No, fine, fair enough. I'll take that hit.
I'm here too, you know.
Yeah,
I'm here too.
But I'm not on Facebook. My phone shaky footage of something I made on After Effects kind of which a lot of people do.
You've not intensively tried to discover periods of missing time and
no I've not went out my way to look for that. Like,
are you a contact team?
No, like people who can't take no for an answer, so people send images or video and being a photography and air quotes expert.
You are.
Yeah, I have a degree.
Take away your air quotes.
Yeah.
You're an expert.
I'm an expert.
Own it.
Yeah, I know how cameras work. Basically, I can spot when something's just an anomaly, light or a lens flare or whatever. I know what that looks like. But people will argue with you till they're blue in the face that it's not, and that it is a UFO and it's aliens and they met them and all that kind of stuff, and you're like, but it's not. So when you start meeting people like that, having that conversation over and over again, and that not only goes to ufology but also other areas as well, it can become a wee bit disillusioned by the whole thing, I think.
You need a holiday.
I think that's what I actually really do need a holiday, and then I'll come back nice and fresh.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was talking about Scottish ufology. So, Michael, have you got something from the past that might be interesting?
Yes.
The first recorded Scottish UFO case.
Is it the first recorded?
I think it is, yeah.
Oh,
you've been this 212, Michael. Come on.
Is it 212?
Yeah.
Right, okay, that's
right. So, Michael, off the top of your head, can you remember any historical mention of something unusual?
Off the top of my head?
Yeah,
you mean some knowledge I've got kicking in about back there? Well, now that I think it, I believe it was the year 1590, and the location is really kind of unknown.
Yeah, not 1690.
Not 1690, no. That was a whole other time.
That was a whole other orange light.
I believe there were some Scottish peasants seeing some large tubular lights in the sky. Somewhere in Scotland, and they were so disturbed by this, they reported it to the Shire Reeve, which is the king's representative in the town, and reported seeing this thing hovering over the town. And they said that it hung motionlessness. I'll try that again. It hung motionless in the sky for several minutes before it vanished. So yeah. That was the first...
1590.
At some unknown, unspecified location somewhere in Scotland. It was in Falkirk. Let's say Falkirk. We'll just say it's in Falkirk. Right, it was in Falkirk in 1590.
Okay. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So...
I believe, although I'm not going off on a tangent or anything, but I believe there was quite a few medieval UFO sightings recorded. Not just in Scotland, but in other places as well.
But we can't talk about them because
well,
it's not our jurisdiction.
No, it's not. That's outside. We can't just go wandering into it. That's a podcast about Scotland.
Yeah, Scottish paranormal stuff. Yeah, so fast forward just a mere 400 years. 401 years, we had the Bonnybridge flap. So for those of people that don't know about this, Michael's going to explain it all really succinctly.
Thank you.
It's not in that book.
I know, it's fine. What book? There's no book. Right, so the Bonnybridge incident Bonnybridge is an area in central Scotland. It's between Glasgow and Edinburgh and Stirling, and they call it the Falkirk Triangle or the Bonnybridge Triangle. It's just this area in the middle of Scotland.
It's different than the Buckfast Triangle.
No, that's a whole other thing.
That's a whole not triangle of trans-dimensional experience.
Yes.
Other world entities.
Yeah, so in... I believe it was the early part of the 90s, 1992 or 1993, it was the first UFO sightings started kind of cropping up in that area, which coincidentally is still around about the same time I saw my UFO over Edinburgh.
I noticed that, yeah.
Yeah. So there was a big flap, and then from the years of 1992 onwards to about 96, these really peaked to the point where the local councillor, a guy called Billy Buchanan, went to the British Parliament and lobbied the Prime Minister at the time. I can't remember if it was Tony Blair.
Well, does that sound right? Maybe John Major or Tony Blair.
I think it was Tony Blair. Okay. He lobbied Tony Blair for an official government investigation to be opened into all these sightings in the area. And if you hark back to the 70s, there was a famous UFO case which we've mentioned before, with the Bob Taylor case, which was in that kind of general neck of the woods as well. Where
Detriment law.
I think
it was pronounced Detriment.
Detriment law.
Yeah.
So it was an area, a forested area, where a gentleman was, for lack of a better word, attacked by a UFO.
A gaseous attack, yes.
Yeah, it was like the gaseous attack.
Yeah.
Where he was attacked. It was kind of Scotland's version of the Travis Walton. By a weird coincidence, that a forestry worker in Scotland called Bob Taylor was abducted by, or he wasn't abducted by aliens.
An
attempted abduction by aliens.
For people that aren't familiar with the case, basically there was a sort of a fire break in the forest and the trees, and he looked up and basically had his dog with him, and he saw what looked like a small sort of disc-shaped craft. Well, it's just all just like, it's almost like something like a ball with a disc around it, with little helicopters or blades around the rim. And it was actually somewhat diaphanous. It was semi-transparent, translucent, which was quite interesting. And from this craft that was in the clearing, the two little robots or aliens, like World War II mines, sort of spiky balls with sucking ends, kind of rolled down towards him, and he was overcome by this powerful smell, and he basically came to a while later, and he'd obviously been dragged. He's been dragged some distance up the path, and you could actually see these little boot marks or trench marks where he'd been dragged up backwards, and you saw the really odd markings in the soil, and also his trousers were ripped. So anyway, basically he stumbled home and told his wife, oh, I've been abducted by a spaceship. And his wife was like, oh dear, that's awfully strange. And the police were called, and it's actually, I think it's the only like criminal assault case, is that right?
Yeah, involving a UFO
in the annals of legal history in Scotland. Yeah, but the interesting thing about this is one of my friends and colleagues, Archie Laurie, he was on site very soon afterwards, and he saw the markings in the soil. But obviously, somebody that was on the case was Malcolm Robinson, and Big Malky, investigated the case, and he's written a book specifically all about this, about this case. And apparently, Malcolm still has the trousers. This is what I found fascinating. This is like the Turing shroud of ufology.
Yes,
these are trousers that have been fingered by robot suckers, right?
Yeah,
and apparently, Malcolm says that like some Americans have like offered him like $1 million for these trousers.
Yeah,
and he's like, no, you know, in case they're part of some government conspiracy to shred them.
Cover them,
or basically put them in one of those wooden crates.
Yeah,
in the big warehouse.
Indiana Jones.
So Malcolm hasn't given them up, but basically, if I were you, Malcolm, just get an old pair of trousers.
Yeah, rip them up a bit,
drag them through the forest, leave them in a...
They need to be flares.
I leave flares, yeah, in 1980, wasn't it?
79,
was it? Okay. And, yeah, get a good stink on them. Yeah. You know, make them fusty, proper.
Yeah, soil them maybe as well, because if you saw aliens, you might soil yourself, so...
Yeah, exactly. At least a bit of a wet one. And... and then just logged that for $1 million. $1 million? Okay.
Yeah. I also own a pair of ripped UFO trousers if anybody wants to buy them. I'll be putting them on eBay. Starting bid, £1 million.
Yeah.
What I find interesting is because this is Scotland's kind of version of the Travis Walton case. Travis Walton case was on the 5th of November 1975. Robert Taylor case was on the 9th of November 1979. It was nearly the same date. So maybe aliens like to abduct people on in November.
That's a good date for it.
Get you back in time for Christmas.
That's it. That's true. It's very true. So yeah, so it's a very fascinating case. If you don't know about it, then you can find plenty of documentary footage of Bob Taylor.
Yeah. So back to this area where Bonnybridge has had over 300 UFO sightings a year and was the official UFO capital of Scotland. So,
is there an official UFO capital? What's the ceremony?
Yeah,
like?
It's the official UFO. Well,
does Carol Smiley come around with a plaque?
Yeah, in fact, no, people listen, who the hell is Carol Smiley?
What do you mean?
She's famous everywhere. Yeah, yeah, right, you're right.
Okay.
You'll listen to in over 60 countries around the world.
About
Carol Smiley.
Lorraine Kelly.
There you go, everyone, even better. Lorraine Kelly rocked up with a plaque to open the official UFO capital of Scotland. She didn't. So, yeah, where were we? Yes, Bonnybridge. Over 300 sightings in that area a year at its peak. The local councillor, Billy Buchanan, went to... The Prime Minister. I went, Mr. Prime Minister, we have got UFOs, you need to investigate it. That sounds not like Billy Buchanan. I kind of trailed off.
And that didn't happen.
Yeah, and did that not happen?
No.
So he didn't go, Mr. Prime Minister.
No, he did say that, but then nothing happened.
Oh, right, nothing happened. Right, okay. So they never investigated it. And Billy, to his credit, still to this day, is fighting a good fight and trying to get the truth out about the UFOs in Bonnybridge.
What I find interesting is apparently people are still seeing things, they're just not reporting it to the press for fear of ridicule.
And then comes my, what I was saying at the start, where we have so much technology at our fingertips now, and we can't capture it. Why can we not capture this well?
There are some Bigfoot hunters and some Nessie, you know, there are cryptozoologists out there that are like, literally hunters, i.e. armed with guns and nets and harpoons, trying to actually capture these things. Are there any UFO hunters that just wait with like 50 caliber sniper rifles aimed at the sky? Yeah. So instead of like, you know, because people go and do that CE5, close encounter 5, let's communicate with it. And just like, somebody's just blasting them out of the sky.
Yeah. When you speak of cryptozoology and Loch Ness, two tourists were stunned to find they'd caught on camera what appears to be a pair of UFOs hovering above the home of the Loch Ness Monster in April 2015.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so they were out on Loch Ness and seen these two lights above Loch Ness. Can you imagine if the aliens abducted Nessie?
No, they're just it's and Nessie's getting its every centennial health check.
Yeah, that's such a Scottish problem. Or a Loch Monster's been abducted by aliens
testing for bowel cancer.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, just checking her. Just checking. Nessie could be an alien. She could be a pet.
She could.
No, just checking on her.
It's interesting because the whole sort of there's one theory, one somewhat credible theory. Apparently, Alan Hynek, or Dr. J. Alan Hynek, who was famously started off as a professor of astronomy and a debunker. He was sort of professional debunker for the Project Blue Book, the United States Air Force investigation into UFOs, and he was a famous debunker. In fact, he was the man that talked about people's UFO experiences being swamp gas. That was him what suggested it.
So was that him that
who suggested it? But then it was only when he was actually just because he was just kind of paying attention to all these cases that he eventually became a believer. He went, no, actually, there is something to it. But towards the end of his life, he actually kind of abandoned the extraterrestrial hypothesis, or not necessarily abandoned it, but became far more convinced that it was much more about Earth lights or maybe some kind of not as yet understood natural phenomenon associated perhaps with tectonic plates and stress and things like that.
That's the way I'm starting to go with this, because often before earthquakes and stuff like that, lights, orbs are seen in the sky or stuff like before earthquakes. So they think like it could be some sort of atmospheric thing because of the tectonic plates rubbing or something. Yeah.
He says, quickly scanning the bookshelves, oh yes, Paul Devereaux. He makes quite a convincing argument that there's a correlation between stresses along tectonic plates and actually not just these stresses along fault lines, but actually stone circles and UFO sightings.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, if you look at Scotland, and especially if you look at Loch Ness, then basically Loch Ness is sort of is one big fault line.
It's one big
fault line. And the whole area of Loch Ness is, you may or may not know, boys and girls, but it's not just a fishy monster. There's lots of hauntings, lots of hot ghost action. You know, there's the whole
area. Hot ghost action?
Hot ghost action, yeah. Hot ghost action, yeah.
Wow.
Quite literally, because Crowley's old house went up in smoke.
All right, okay.
Yeah, so there you go.
Well, fires in Scotland as well.
Fires, that's it.
Love to burn things down.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because it's not as if it's a hostile, wet, miserable environment.
Yeah,
we don't really need houses.
Yeah,
so just burn them.
Yeah, just burn them all down.
Just burn them all down. So yeah, the reason why I brought that whole kind of Earth lights theory about ufology is Scotland does have a history of these lights across lochs. There's the Callert Light, which is basically towards the north of Glencoe. A lot of people might be familiar with Glencoe as this scene of tragic Scottish history, but also tremendous beauty. Glencoe is, has this awesome. It's a proper use of the word. It is awesome.
It's one of the most beautiful places on the planet.
Yeah, but it's kind of slightly terrifying and awesome. Yes. You know, it's Glencoe. But towards the north of that is a little village, Ballyhoolish, and And in the loch there, there's a little island, and basically there's this light called the Callert Light that's meant to be seen that float across the loch. So yeah,
they've been captured on camera, and the evidence for them is quite good.
Yeah, especially, but what's the? I mean, I know we're going out with the boundaries of Scotland, but was it Hestalen in Sweden or something like that? I don't know whether or not I've pronounced the name right, but this idea that there are certain places that you can see these lights. I mean that's one of the arguments about like Washington State and why those lights are seen there around
you know, Mount McKinley.
And all basically that mountain range there. Yeah. They've got a history of having these lights, and obviously Kenneth Arnold's first sighting was that, maybe
the birth of the modern saucer,
all that kind of stuff. So yeah, interesting. So yeah, I think I would agree with you. I think it's I think the whole point of the paranormal is it's never one circle of stuff. It's always a Venn diagram with lots of overlapping possibilities.
Yeah,
I think that seems to be in my opinion. I think the best way you can interpret the paranormal is looking at it as a combination of factors, and the paranormal is always the wee bit right in the middle, because it could be many things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the paranormal lives. The paranormal lives at the centre of a Venn diagram. That's my high concept piece of nonsense.
Awesome. So we've spoke about when UFOs started in Scotland. We've spoke about where they happen now.
Yeah.
Anything been happening recently?
Well, I'm going to talk about a case that's never been talked about ever.
This, and I'm excited.
Yeah, and I was certainly very excited when this case landed on my desk as an investigator with the Scottish Society for Psychical Research. And how can I have to sort of do a wee intro to this story. Because this case didn't go the way I wanted it to go.
Oh.
It did not resolve itself in a satisfactory manner. And my relationship with the client didn't necessarily end well.
Ooh.
Right. And I will explain why. This was essentially, in terms of an investigation, a correspondence. It was an email correspondence. Certain objects or artifacts were exchanged via post.
Okay.
And those things were listened to or examined. But apart from that, it was essentially just an email correspondence.
Okay, so there's no face-to-face.
There was no face-to-face. And I think what happened was the client, who was extremely disturbed by their experiences and essentially just wanted them to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted was actually, I thought it was about time naturally just to meet this person.
Mm-hmm.
I think a face to face would have actually been helpful, been useful to fill in some gaps. And even, and I don't mean this insultingly, but it was actually something else that a member of the SSPR mentioned, and I thought, well, actually, I didn't really consider it. And considering we are talking about the internet, it's just even to confirm who this person said they were.
Yeah,
because somebody could have been making it all up. As it happens, I think there is a core element of something happening, and you'll understand what I might mean. But this person seems to exhibit or talk about classic abductee, contactee, like phenomenon.
Okay.
It's just like, it's like almost textbook. They tick so many boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So how objectively real, whether or not this person was drifting into like fugue states and imagining these things, or whether or not this person was having these real interdimensional experiences, because some of these experiences are more like a David Lynch film.
All right, okay. And right. This is in Scotland?
This is in Scotland.
Okay.
So,
do we get a geographical location?
I will tell you two things about this person and nothing more.
Okay.
Because essentially this case ended when I was essentially pushing for, look, I think it's time for us to meet.
Mm-hmm.
And let's, you either sort of step away from it more, or you kind of push more into it, mm-hmm. as it were, in terms of investigation. And I just thought, well, it's time to get more into it. And this person was just frustrated, didn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
But they were frustrated it was still going on, their experiences. And so they just said, well, okay, forget it, not do this anymore, and also delete everything. Okay. And basically my perspective is, well, you can't do that. The contract you have in terms of as being an investigator is you will take on this information for research purposes, and my bargain, my agreement is to ensure that you will always be treated with the utmost confidentiality, so nobody will know your name,
mm-hmm.
and any details will be weeked away.
Right, okay.
So in terms of how I'm going to speak about the case, there are only two things. This person is a man. This person lives alone. And they live in Edinburgh, and that's it.
Okay, that's all I need. That's all I need.
Okay.
I'm sure that's all the listeners need as well.
Now, there are other details in terms of profession and background, etc.
Yeah, but you won't, we don't need that. It's
don't,
not,
don't
it's
need
not
that
important to the case.
Exactly. So you'll
unless they're a security guard. Are they a security guard? I can't tell you.
So what I am doing is I am reading from emails, but I will not be doing.
We don't need the voice. We'll keep the voice for.
Yeah, I'm not going to do the voice, because I think this person is so sensitive about this case that I don't want them to even think for a second that I'm not taking this seriously.
Yeah. So this is a real case given to Innes.
Yeah.
Obviously quite serious. So we're going to treat this one with a lot of seriousness and respect.
Okay. So, and it started off essentially about one thing and grew, which is interesting as well, because that you said that was one of your big problems with taking ufological cases seriously, that they would start off small, like, oh, I just saw this, and then you get what you might assume might be exaggeration, elaboration, confabulation, just somebody making more stuff up to maintain the attention.
Mm-hmm.
But often it can be that this person who has unusual experience, says they want to be believed. So they're going to miss out parts of their story that they find themselves unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to start off with what they think is the most credible or believable, and then test the water in terms of... And this is what you often find when you speak to clients. They might start off with, this is happening. And then the next week, that's happening too. And then eventually you might further down the line get something that's like proper crazy bonkers. Yeah. But it's not necessarily they're making that up. It's the fact that... You have to build a relationship of trust.
It's almost like a double-edged sword. If you go in with too much detail, you could potentially sound like an insane person.
Yeah.
But if you also hold back and then start slowly releasing information, it does sound like you're starting to embellish it slightly.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I do get where it is sort of like a double-edged sword in that respect.
Yeah. So in terms of my own feeling about this entire case, I regard it as regret.
Okay.
I'm still interested in this person and their experiences, and I would like them still to get in touch. So if this person even is listening, you never know.
Yeah, you never know. You
never know. I would like them to get back in touch. What I find so fascinating about it is it does seem to be just sort of like classic abductee. Anyway, here we go.
Let's go. I'm going to turn my mic down so you don't hear me breathing.
Oh, well, there we go. Right, so the very first contact is an email, and the very first sentence is, I'm not sure I should be writing to you, but this thing is driving me nuts. I live in Edinburgh, and for months now, every time I drop off to sleep, there is a thud, a dull, rather angry sounding noise, which usually comes from somewhere inside my bed. So essentially the first email is just it's quite a long email, but it's talking about these noises, etc. And they started off in their bed, and that annoyed them so much, so they ended up actually sleeping on their sofa. And they're basically just saying, can it be stopped? Anyone have any ideas apart from staying awake all night? Because it's basically, it's when they start to drift off, they get these noises. He says, I have tried listening to soothing, relaxing music through headphones, but I'm only rewarded for that with what can be only be described as a kick to the sofa. Any ideas on how to stop this would be appreciated. So essentially, the very first contact, the very first email is just an email about this annoying sort of experience. So of course, naturally, my first email to them is asking them all these different things, blah, 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 blah. And also just about whether or not they could record them. So anyway, here we go. So naturally, when I ask, you're asking, you, have you ever tried to record this? Now, to cut a long story short, this person, did I buy a dictaphone? I think I bought a dictaphone, just a cheap little dictaphone tape, you know, dictaphone. And I think I posted it to them. And they recorded the noise and then sent it back. But then asking about, have you had any other odd experiences? Then this is where you get the real juice, okay? Starts talking about odd experiences. So if you saw this woman walking down the street, you wouldn't bat an eyelid. She looked entirely human. As she appeared to me that night, I would say she was of normal height. Although you must remember that I was lying down flat. So this is talking about his memories, his experiences of lying in bed. So already it's unusual talking about a woman in his room at night. She had an oval face. Her hair was black and held up on her head in a bun. There was nothing startling about her facial features. She didn't smile, but she didn't look severe either. Her eyes were slanted, but not oriental. They were not small eyes, but as you might expect, an oriental, kind of look. Of their colour, I would say they were dark, but entirely normal otherwise. So he's saying that, you know, that wasn't the weird bit. He says what was odd was she was dressed in silver. Although it's only looking back on it later that I would say that she was dressed in some kind of jumpsuit or ski suit. At least that's what it's looked like. It was not tight-fitting. It was gathered at the neck and in the waist and also around her wrists. Her fingers looked normal, if a little longer than usual. It wasn't until she held that thing over my face that I really noticed her hands, however. I was more concerned with who she was, how she got in, and if I was going to be kidnapped. The suit thing she was wearing glittered in the moonlight that was shining through my bedroom window from behind me when she stepped fully into its light. If I had to guess her age, I would say early 30s. Of her colour, I would say it was of a slight tan. She never spoke at the time. Up to the point she held that sphere-like thing above my face, that's where it ended. Although it would be years later, I would remember coming to and finding my arms and legs inside similar spheres. If you think about the arms and legs of the Michelin Man, you may get an impression of what I mean. I remember struggling to sit up, but all I could do then was to lift up my head, which I could do easily, and see my arms and legs inside those glass things. So he's describing in a very sort of dreamlike way this woman appearing to him, placing some odd kind of goldfish bowl type thing over his face, and then him having another memory of waking up. So he's basically, so what's interesting already is you're getting I'm leafing through these email letters and highlighting certain moments. But what I would say is already, if you're a fan of ufologists like John A. Keel, you're getting like really classic standard ultra-terrestrial tropes of these slightly olive-skinned
humanoid
kind of people that look almost, you know, but just slight odd things.
Yeah.
He alludes to her being almost normal, although there's something different about the fingers.
Yeah, it sounds like when you get the Men in Black, they looked normal, but there was something just slightly off.
Yeah, slightly off. Yeah. Well, we'll get to the Men in Black later, okay. So then he talks about missing time. He says they've been missing time three times in his life. So he remembers asking his mother at the age of six if he'd ever been in an aeroplane before. No, I hadn't, but I do remember looking at Edinburgh from the air through a large lens type thing. I even remember what I saw from up there at the time. Now, immediately, if you think of Edinburgh, you think of a camera obscura, which is at the top of the Royal Mile.
Yep.
And you can actually look about.
Mm-hmm. I only went to that for the first time in the end of December.
Yeah. So it's possible that it might be that. In any other city, the answer would be no.
Yeah.
But ironically, Edinburgh has this amazing camera obscura that you can actually look at Edinburgh from above through a large lens-like thing.
And you're in a dark room.
Yeah, in a dark room.
In a big round table. Yeah.
Okay. However, the camera obscura doesn't explain this one. Dragged kicking and screaming out of my bed twice in my life, once in my late 20s and once in my late 30s, by things I cannot even begin to describe, because I could not even bring myself to look at them. Even although I couldn't avoid glancing at them, there was such a rough and tumble about it, never mind the terror and panic. Both times happened at night. Once I was reading a book in bed, the other when I was trying to fall asleep. The first time I had something pressed against my neck, and after that happened I couldn't care less. So then he remembers being carried face down over a field in the dark by these things. That was my late 20s. And memories of holding a baby boy, brackets, I have no children, in a large place of darkness, brackets, a light shining above me, close brackets, and feeling very upset because of it. Happened twice within a fortnight of each incident in my late 30s. So this is where it gets kind of, so you're having these elements, classic abductee sort of elements here. And then this is where it gets that sort of Whitley, Strieber, and also sort of David Lynch. Waking up to find myself sitting in my desk chair in the middle of the night in the dark, and this little guy looking at me just off to the side from 8 feet away. So this is when he's in his late 30s in his flat. Then it suddenly ends like a spliced piece of film begins and end. I had seen this little character before once when I was 10 years old. And then he says, he's not scary in the slightest. In fact, I would say for some reason, it's his job to make sure that I am okay. Don't ask me why. So we're getting classic, classic abductee stuff. I always quite like this little story because this was especially, David, this is very, very, this is extremely Lynchian. Right?
Okay.
So he talks about an experience when waking on another night. So waking another night and having to run through to the bathroom to be sick and vomiting what looked like altered blood into the bath. My nose hadn't been bleeding, but I put it down to that I'd been swallowing the blood as I slept. I washed it away and told no one. So he says, I do not want my home investigated, nor me, myself for that matter. I do hope, however, that you can keep my name confidential, of course. I do not want anyone else knowing about any of this. So he's saying that he lives alone. Nobody knows about any of this apart from me, basically, the person he's corresponding with. He says, I am not psychic. I don't believe anyone can be either. So this is an interesting kind of avenue. A lot of people that have experienced these things might conclude, if they even had a cursory glance at the literature, we think, well, maybe I have a wider awareness or perception, and these experiences can fit into that, sort of shamanic type, otherworldly, mediumistic sort of experiences.
Yes.
But he dismisses that. He dismisses that. He says, I live a very quiet, unassuming life. I just wish all of this would go away and leave me alone. What he's written about has been a purely cathartic exercise, and therefore easier said to a stranger whom I know I will never meet. So he's already sort of saying that I'm his like psychic toilet. This is where all this stuff that he wants to get off his chest, but he wants to flush it away. You know, he wants this to stop. So then just talking about all the odd experiences of his life asking him to review his childhood. And there's just it's something basically for almost every year. So he says when he was the age of two, he remembers looking down through a large lens at a structure not far from here. Okay. So yet again, that could be the camera obscura.
Yeah.
So then this is the sort of little lynching thing. So he says, the first to school in the morning. So he says, he was always there first. And he sits on the wall. And then a little guy comes up to me and he looks like his double.
Right, okay.
And he stands to the right of me. He knows I'm upset. I don't know why I'm upset, but something isn't right. For my protection, he is going to take something away from me. And he knows when he's talking about when he's 6 years old, he knows that it's not an object, it's something metaphorical or something non-physical, and he will keep it safe. So these are just these memories.
So it sounds like he's got like this handler.
He's got a little mystic handler.
Yeah.
He's got a. So yeah, he talks about seeing lights in the sky. And then just classic sort of UFO contactee stuff going on here. Talks about telephone calls, endless problems with electronics, BT engineers being called out all the time, phone ringing, people, really, really odd conversations on the phone. You know, like he's it's like listening to other people's conversations constantly on the telephone, or people trying, shouting, help, help me over the phone, telephone, things like that.
Okay.
Or just
when he picks up the receiver.
Yeah. And just really, really, just odd stuff like that. This is one, basically in his early 20s, is he says that everyone keeps seeing me all over the place. I lose friendships over it. A perfect stranger walks up to me in a bar and talks to me as if he has known me from some time before, a few nights before. I've never been out. I've been at work. He doesn't believe me. I walk away. That night, some maniac follows me in a car. He keeps going at speed up and down the road. I make a run for it up a lane. So he's talking about... Now, I thought this was interesting, an interesting admission, because it's like maybe this person goes into some kind of fugue state and he doesn't remember going in, you know, so he doesn't remember mm-hmm. going out. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible that, but, you know, it just raises those sort of questions. He talks about a time he went on holiday. And so this whole thing is, there seems to be this theme that, so not only are people, it's like literally sort of being depersonalized. This mm-hmm. That's a depersonalization, and so he's literally being multiplied or depersonalized by this feeling that or reality. I don't know that there are other versions of him out in Edinburgh.
Yeah,
right.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, the other versions of him in Edinburgh, so making him question whether or not. Oh my God, what's going on? And this actually happens literally at the border. He's off on holiday and basically passport control look at his passport and say, no, this isn't you.
What?
Yep. So there you go. He's dragged in by the port authorities out of all the hundreds of others. Me, I get my passport back after it's been checked, and just as I take it, someone yells out my name. I'm taken in for questioning. My bags are searched twice. I'm told I'm not the guy in the passport. I'm told it's either a forgery or it's stolen. I'm told I'm too young for it. I'm told my accent's all wrong. I'm also told they've been watching me, right, brackets, I was already paranoid from nothing to for nothing to what I fell after that. And that, you know, they were still watching. So this, I just think that there's little...
Had he been to Amsterdam?
Well, I don't know. So he can't sleep. He gets up in the middle of the night and suddenly he's living room and he's looking out his window and you can see this guy with a denim jacket or something basically just outside and the guy's outside but the guy is outside looking in at him.
Right.
Like, and he's like, oh, that's a bit odd.
Nosy neighbour
or just some random, somebody he didn't recognise. So what he did is he just slowly backed away from the guy, obviously from being looked at, and then just kind of went round the corner, you know, right. Into like another room or something.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy couldn't see him anymore, and then he just turned round and the guy was standing right next to him, right from an inch from his face, and then
inside the house. Oh,
so. And that's very David Lynch. But the anecdote ends there. He didn't elaborate. He didn't say. Right. He didn't say. And then we had a. And then I punched his face. Or
yeah. And then yeah.
Yeah.
So it just the story just ends there.
The story just ends there like a scene from a David Lynch movie. So the thing is
horror film.
This story, this account seem to have it all. He also talks about when people are convinced that they've been speaking to him previously.
Mm-hmm.
Often the things they say, so oh no, we had this big long chat, and you're talking about the end of the world and things like that. And so there seems to be this apocalyptic theme to these alternative versions of himself. So I'll tell you what I did, as I formulated a little theory, just a wee idea.
Okay.
And my little idea is this: is I just thought, well, maybe when he becomes emotionally agitated or upset, is basically his memory banks switch to another file. And so when he becomes emotional or agitated, basically he kind of switches to another kind of way of remembering or experiencing. And then when he calms down, etc., whatever, then he kind of comes back and he has no recollection of what he did. But he's kind of this. So I thought it might be some kind of odd kind of fugue state or semi-hallucinatory state associated with these emotions. Because the reason why I thought that was interesting is because he talks about things which are clearly mundane or not weird, but he talks about them as if they're significant. He talks about, you know, that very long list from his childhood, and he's listing in amongst these accounts of like little kind of doppelgangers chatting to him in playgrounds and... lights and being abducted and you know, women in silver jumpsuits, etc. He's also mentioning things like different coloured plastic rods, and those are what's called Kunizer rods. Do you know this?
Nope.
It's how they used to teach arithmetic in schools.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
So they're little, you have one colour for a one,
yeah.
Two for a two, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's how it helps children learn to count and add up and things like that.
I've never thought of them since we used them
exactly.
In primary school.
But he was mentioning it like it was something significant.
Right, okay.
So I think if you, in the same way that if you think you're being followed, then you will be followed. You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah,
it's
convince yourself.
Yeah, yeah, because all somebody really needs to do for you to think that they really are following you is just be behind you.
Yes.
And how many people are behind you in your life at any point when you're out walking about? So I don't know. So I formulated a little theory that this might be some kind of condition associated with emotion and significance, that there was that kind of that non-significant events were becoming significant and vice versa, and there was a whole lot of thing. But what I found frustrated is the relationship with the client broke down, and I did read out earlier on that there was this tension and frustration that he wanted in some way these experiences to be taken seriously to stop them happening.
Yeah.
But as an investigator, there's like that's this kind of like a wall in which you can't investigate closer.
Yes.
And I think at the very bare minimum, for it to be a real investigation, any other objective investigator would ask, so did you meet the person?
Yeah.
Could you at least confirm anything?
Yeah. And you couldn't.
Yeah. And unfortunately disappeared. But I thought it was an absolutely fascinating case. I mean, this is what I would say, whether or not I don't know what's happening, but whatever it is, it's an interesting case with lots of really interesting elements, including basically the sort of the thing that disturbed him is he said that lots of like psychokinetic things were happening at his work, so lots of things were being thrown about or knocked down around him,
right?
And also that whether or not this was really happening or not, I don't know. But he said that like rat-like things that could have even been actually rats kept sort of running at him,
right?
As well, so it was just odd.
Yeah,
odd. And he was like, you know, help make this stop. And I was like, okay, well, let's meet up. I think it's time to meet.
Yeah,
sir.
Yes.
Because
and he backed up. He's like,
yeah,
no. Yeah.
So yeah, so I hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah, I found that really fascinating. One of the things I've started, or I did it for the first time last night, was after this episode airs, live, I jump on Twitch and I do a wee live broadcast where people can talk to me live.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And they can ask questions and stuff like that. So after this episode airs, if you go to www.twitch.com/weirderhings, I'll be there. Answering any questions or talking about this episode. And
wow.
So it's quite fun.
Yeah, so thanks very much.
So tune into that
Definitely.
Directly after this episode.
And we'll be back with some more weirder things. Cheerio now!
Cheerio, that should be our wee call off.
Yeah.
Cheerio now!
Cheerio now!